Welcome to Life Lab with David Ponder and Zach Schaefer. We are the podcast of experience experiments.
We give you those experiments via change challenges at the end of each episode.
We created this podcast because we wanted to talk about important topics that can help us all live meaningful lives.
You might agree with what we have to say, or you might disagree. But the point there is that you get something new to think about.
There's no edits and no gimmicks. Our entire point is to help you take action and live a better life.
You only get one life to live, so you may as well make the most of it.
Hey everybody, Zach Schaefer here. Happy New Year and welcome back to Life Lab.
And this is David Ponder. And did you like the new intro?
We do.
Yeah, we love it. We love it. We really do. We got to say thanks. A big thanks out to Harry and Gilbert, those guys down at Arch Audio Engineers and Baking Goods.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting story. If you're all familiar with the store Potbellies, they sell really good hot sandwiches. It actually started out as an antique shop. So they sold like antique furniture and wooden stuff and I don't know. But apparently they made sandwiches for their customers. Well, those sandwiches turned out to be so good and in such high demand, they pivoted their entire business, quit selling the furniture and antiques, and now sell sandwiches. And Gilbert and Harry down at Arch Audio and Baking Engineers did something similar. So they make great intros and outros for podcasts and a variety of film production. But they also baked these fantastic donuts, right?
Yeah, if you have not had a donut from the guys down at Arch, you got to go check them out in Marathon Village.
Yeah, they're in Marathon Village.
They've got a cool spot. Obviously, if you need any media work, you know, sound work.
Yeah,
they're top notch.
I recommend the Goliath. Their Goliath donut is really good.
Yes, I would second the Goliath. All right, so what are we talking about today?
Today, what did we talk about last week? Last week we talked about identity evolution, and a person's sense of self, and how that sense of self changes or doesn't change over time. And I think this is somewhat related to that topic to a degree.
Yeah, this is definitely a big part of your identity.
This is one of the biggest topics that we'll talk about in terms of importance on humanity and for humanity.
And we're talking about religion.
And spirituality.
So what we always start off with a definition.
Sure,
so
yeah, go ahead.
If you just Google religion definition, the first thing that comes up is that it is a noun. It is the belief and worship of a superhuman controlling power, especially a personal god or gods.
Absolutely. So it's interesting. You say religion, and most people, again, in the U.S., we're going to be very biased and ethnocentric and talk about things probably mostly from a Christian standpoint, because that's by far the most dominant religion
here.
Well,
and it's our point of view.
Yeah, that's how we were raised. So when I think here religion, you know, the first thing I think about is how I was raised. And so Dave and I thought it was important for us to share a little bit about our perspective, our stakeholder theory, if you will, having both of us been brought up in fairly traditional Catholic families. Go ahead, Dave. Yeah, jump in.
Yeah. When you're going to talk about religion, you're going to identify with what you know, right? It's one of the things that as I become an adult, I've come to learn I need to know more about and have understand differing views and things that we aren't exposed to naturally. That's been a desire of mine when it comes to spirituality in my adulthood.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and again, this is a touchy subject, but we wanted to talk about it because it's so important. It provides so much meaning for people throughout time. And both positive meaning and negative meaning for some people. So when I hear religion, I think sensory. I think and almost smell incense. I hear bells. I hear songs.
Rituals,
right? Rituals, the human side, the social side of religion, the singing together, the chanting together. I mean, there's very few spots in life where you get to go sing together with a whole group of mostly strangers, and there's something to that. It creates that effervescent collective energy, and it's interesting. So that's what I tend to think about when I hear religion, and I had a very positive, I would think, upbringing. You know, we went to church a couple times a week because I went to Catholic grade school, then a public high school, and then I went to a Catholic Jesuit college, actually, for 6 years.
The exact same path. The exact same path. So,
what do you think of, Dave, when you hear religion? Do you have any of those memories growing up, or do you think about stuff nowadays?
I tend to think about stuff nowadays more because I think I've had a transformative, moment in my life. And so now the way that I think about religion is much different than it was when I was younger. You know, and that's the other thing that's interesting about bringing a child up in a religion is that they accept the world as it is presented, you know. And so to be questioning or having their own experiences that are different from the village in which they are in, it's not really something that is likely to happen.
Yeah, it's interesting that you brought up the kid factor. Yeah. Because, so I self-identify as an agnostic. A lot of people label me militant agnostic. And all that really means is, for me, I don't know what there is beyond this human realm. No one really knows, but they believe it and they have feelings. So I don't know, but I'm 100% open to the idea that there's something else. And I, to be honest, I kind of hope that there's something else and that we aren't the pinnacle of intelligence in this universe. But I'm open to it. I'm always seeking. I ask a lot of questions. I'm fascinated by people's faith in their faith and belief in their beliefs. And I actually pulled out this series of questions. I used to be more on the militant side of my militant agnosticism and carry around a whole set of questions so that when I would get into a conversation, I could pull it out and sort of assault them or like a prosecuting attorney go through my questions. Right. And I've since changed that. I still ask a lot of questions, but it's to understand now rather than tear down.
Rather than persuade.
I wasn't even trying to persuade. I was if I'm honest with myself, I was probably trying to tear down and stroke my ego. So that, oh, okay, my belief in not knowing is better and superior to yours because you can't answer my questions.
I see. There's comfort in having others who agree with you. And I feel like that is a big motivation when people try to persuade with religion. It's probably the number one. You know, I've said this on the show, I don't know how many times. We all have this hole that we're trying to fill. Like, there's something missing, we feel like. And religion, man, that is for a majority of our society, that is it. That is what that's their pillow that they lay their uncertainty on, and it gives them comfort. Now, being agnostic is such an uncomfortable thing, and I also consider myself to be agnostic. But what I would say is, my agnosticism is more in line with religion as it is with everything in life. Like, I always want to be evolving. I always want to be learning. I always want to be seeking. I always want to be exploring. And to me, you know, we talked about our experiences growing up, so I have to at least give my a brief account of my most important experience, and that is that grew up in a Catholic grade school, went to a public high school, went to a Jesuit Catholic university. When I was 17, I was diagnosed with cancer. I was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. Most people listening to this who know me, you know, are familiar with that story. I don't know how many people I've told this story, which is that when you're laying there and you're 17, and after you know the denial wears off and you're trying to come to grips with this, and you start thinking about what your life has meant and what does it mean if you die now. I had the thought, like, am I, okay, I've said all of these things, I've done all of these rituals, I was confirmed, you know, like saying I believe in everything that the Catholic faith preaches and everything, and then I thought, you know, do I have doubts? And then I started to explore those doubts, and I said, yeah, I absolutely do have doubts. And then I thought, well, okay, so if God knows I have doubts, because he knows everything, right, then is he just going to see this all as a farce? Like, everything that I did was a farce because I doubt anyway, right? Like, you have to be unbending in your faith that, you know, of the tenets of the religion. And so I started down that path of, like, okay, if I have doubts, why do I have doubts? I started exploring those doubts. I started trying to learn a little bit more about alternates and things like that. And that was the beginning of this journey to realization. And that realization took years. I ended up in Colorado in the basement of a Catholic church talking to a priest to a point where he flat out asked me something like, well, do you believe that Jesus is the Son of God and your acceptance in him is the only way to heaven?
Yeah, I remember when I got that pointed question as well from my parents when we were talking. And I remember their face when I told them my answer.
And I said, I think my question back to him was like literally? I was like, because I believe that, I said something like, you know, I believe that, that was a story that was told to convey morality and all these things, but do I believe that literally that's the truth? And I was just like, no. And he was like, you can't be Catholic.
Get out. You're going to hell.
That was his actual response. Now,
how old were you?
This was when I was in Colorado, so I was 25.
Oh, 26. Okay. I thought you were a child.
No.
You're not Catholic anymore, son.
No. I mean, by that point, I had decided I was agnostic, but I was really just trying to do that thing that I was talking about, explore my faith and really decide where am I at in this. And so I had been talking to a Catholic.
Okay, so let's look
priest.
At his response, though. You analyze your response, and thank you for giving your sort of origin and religious evolution story. Do you respect his response?
I do.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
Because whether we agree or not with his fundamental belief system, he stuck to his guns. He's like, well, sorry, bud, that's the minimum qualification for you to join the club. And I like that. Exactly. I like that he didn't try to sugarcoat it and just said, sorry, man, you can't be one of us.
And clearly, I didn't like it at the time. So here's the interesting thing. I had considered myself an agnostic for some years before that because of all experiences that I went to. At that point in my life, I was going through some stuff trying to, you know, find comfort somewhere. And I started talking to that priest, and that was the response I got. So at the time, did I like it or respect it? No, but looking back on it, yeah. You know?
He recovered pretty quickly, though, right? From what, the hospitalization you gave him? Right. No, I touched on something and then got completely off track because, again, we get excited about this conversation. This is a topic we bring up quite often in our friend groups and parent groups. But we have very different beliefs than our parents, and so sometimes it's difficult to talk to them. You had mentioned the kid factor, and then I got sidetracked. How many times did somebody say to you, well, you know, I understand that you have your own beliefs and what they are, but once you have kids, you're going to come back to the church. You're going to raise them in the church. Oh, my God. Every time people were telling me that, it would just strengthen my resolve to not do it just despite those people saying that.
That's not what happened for me. I didn't strengthen my resolve, but I've kind of learned that through my life, I change. We talked about identity last time, and so I've tried to take everything that everyone says with, you know, some credence. And I said, okay, we'll see.
Yeah.
Hasn't turned out to be true, but yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I never tried to persuade anyone about anything religiously. But I love hearing people talk about what their beliefs are. Because what I've found is that many people, they don't even really know. They know the good talking points that if their religion was boiled down to a 3-minute CNN or Fox News segment, they could repeat those big key ideas. But when you start asking truly analytical questions of someone to dive into those core beliefs, to me, it's clear a lot of people either haven't thought through some of that stuff or don't want to or have been encouraged not to.
Yeah, or a blend of all three.
Right.
You know, it's like, So questioning everything is that's our podcast.
Yeah,
it's right.
Karl Marx said
Life
that.
Lab.
Question everything.
I mean, we're talking about experimenting with life. We're talking about getting out of your comfort zone, trying things that are unfamiliar to you, learning things that are new and that challenge your established biases and beliefs. And religion ain't about that, man.
you know? It's not. Well, it's a closed system. It's we have the answer, not negatively, just that is a fact. They believe they have the answer and the knowledge and the system to get someone to nirvana, to perfection, to happiness, to love, to security, to comfort, in eternity, in perpetuity. And that is something I wish I had the faith to believe. I really do. Like, if I prayed, I'd pray for that. Give me the ability to have faith in that paradise. But I just, in my core, when you were sick and had to face yourself dying in a mirror. Man. That's how I think too. It's just like, I don't believe that.
And I think it's important. My whole thing is I just think it's important for people to come to terms with that now. Don't end up in a situation where you're staring down death and you realize that you've been lying to yourself your whole life. People talk about Pascal's wager, right? Which is the idea that, well, I could either say that I believe in God and have a chance of going to heaven, or not and for sure go to hell if there is a heaven and a hell. Right. So I just go ahead and I'll just say I believe
hedging
in God.
Hedging your bets.
Yeah. So I thought about that when I was laying there, and I was just like, you know what? Like, if this God is everywhere and all-knowing, like we keep saying he is, he's going to know that, and if he knows that, then what's the point in trying to lie to yourself or lie to him? He knows you have those doubts, you know?
Yeah.
And so then I was like, I don't know. That just started down the rabbit hole of, okay, well, then how do I at least start being honest with myself?
I like it.
And I mean, I think that's when you're talking about religion, so many people, they don't want to explore those doubts because of the three reasons that you talked about, right? Their religious community doesn't want them to, because they want them to remain a part of the club and stay with the answers that they were told. They themselves have extreme discomfort with it, because what does that mean for my identity if
right.
I have these doubts, right? And what was the third thing that you said? Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But that's the whole point. So when I made that decision, it was like, okay, well, does that mean that I'm not spiritual? I think right, like immediately, it led me to basically get turned off by the idea of religion and spirituality and try to sort of abandon it for a period right. of time. But I think over the years, I've come to learn that you can still, you know, have a place in your life for religion and spirituality and just acknowledge that you don't know what framework or dogma, if any, that are offered here are correct.
We need to flip something, dude. We're coming at this 100% with a huge assumption. We're talking about our beliefs,
we
and
are.
Agnosticism,
we are.
And it's probably making a lot of people who are religious feel uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Okay, so what my goal is for this podcast, I'm not trying to convert you into my belief.
No.
I want you to go through it and strengthen your own. Take what nuggets you can along the way to dive in and think through things or not think through those things and be comfortable in your faith, in your belief system. So
yeah.
My goal is to help you in your life create those positive feelings that we're always going after. And that's it. That's it.
It's hard for us to be positively reinforcing on this, because the thing that we do with every topic is we basically try to challenge the status quo. And you with religion, everyone has a status quo.
What's our tagline? Experiment with life. Yeah, you tend to not. If you go in and say, okay, priest, or okay, rabbi, or okay, imam, I just want to experiment a bit with our belief systems and
right.
structure. Okay, Ten Commandments, I'm going to do a little experiment for the next year.
Right.
The adultery thing, I'm going to throw that out.
Right.
Yeah, that's problematic.
That's
right. You can't really do yeah. that in religion.
Or I'm going to experiment with Buddhism, you know?
Right.
Like, you know, I'm going to quit coming to the Catholic Church for this period of time. I'm going to learn all about Buddhism and go that route just to experiment with it. You know what I mean? They'd be like, well, you're lost, but okay. You know?
Yeah.
So this is a really tough subject to put in the framework of our podcast and not be like
offensive. So if you get offended,
yeah.
that's not our goal. Please listen.
We probably should have done this as a disclaimer.
We will make sure to try to pull back on each other and apologize, because it's not our goal is to offend people, but it's to ask questions and get people thinking, hopefully encourage you to have some dialogue. I wanted to jump into this if we
could,
Dave. So I found a list of a variety of common factors or variables, if you will, that cut across all major religions. And so I'm just going to read through these kind of quickly, and we'll probably talk about a couple. So there has to be a belief in some supernatural power above and beyond nature and our senses. There's a dogma or a doctrine, right? A typically codified written set of beliefs. There's rituals, both that evoke powerful emotions and feelings and that absolutely tap into as many of our five senses as possible. There's faith, right? There's belief without evidence. That's literally what faith means. There's hierarchy and structure. There's progression in any organized religion. There's a lot of bureaucracy. There is a lot of rules, procedures, processes to be followed. All major world religions have a difference between what they believe is sacred and what they believe is profane, or in other words, just ordinary, non-sacred, non-religious. There's a moral code. Dave mentioned that. They all use stories as a vehicle of persuasion. They're organized. They're institutions. And all the difference between that, an institution affects all organizations, whereas a simple organization or a business, clearly it's not affecting a religious institution or the federal government or the military. They all seek inner peace, and they all are involved with recruiting new members. I said to me, the one thing they do is promise a future of hope if you follow their system. And what more do humans want, need, and crave is two things. We've talked about the one a lot, but it's what religion is about. A sense of purpose in this universe and a future of hope within that purpose.
Those two things at the end are, when I said, you know, we have this question, this discomfort, you know, we don't know what our place is in the universe. Those things that Zach said at the end, that is the root of that discomfort. And we try to fill that uncertainty, that doubt, the questioning with different things. Religion's got to be the most powerful one.
Oh, yeah.
That said, you know, when you were going through those, Dr. Schaefer, the things that you said that religious organizations have, I can see many of those that are shared with companies.
Well, because companies took those bureaucratic organizational elements from two key social collectives, one being organized religion and its evolution over the last, at least in Western culture, over the last, you know, 3,000 to 4,000 years, and two, the military. And where did the military? So I don't want to say whether the military, organized military, preceded religion or vice versa, but all modern westernized organizations took their structure, their form from religion and from military.
Got it. Because, I mean, just about everything on that list, right? So rituals, a shared belief, vision, you know, of story as vehicles, progression through the organization, recruiting. I mean, man, the framework is
and why? Because there's it's results. It creates results. It's effective. It achieves its goals, not in a good or negative way. Just it does.
It does.
It is, if you will, for religion.
It is.
I wanted to mention this because we haven't talked about prayer yet.
I love it.
So where would that fit in? Rituals, perhaps, encouraging people to pray, right? And self-meditation. So I've evolved my thoughts on prayer. So while I don't believe in like a codified higher power, like in Jesus Christ as the Son of God, I guess I believe that Jesus was most likely a real person on this earth. And if the stories that were written about him, which were mostly written, the earliest one, I believe, 63 years after he was dead, if any of that's true, we should all live like that guy. He's amazing.
Yeah,
you know, we should aspire to live that way. And there's other prophets, if you will, that live similar lives. My point is, prayer has evolved. So I now do what some would call prayer, but to me it's just offering some general thoughts out to what I call the spirit of the universe, the energy of the universe. But I used to think prayer was so odd, because when you grow up Catholic, and I'm sure most Protestant religions, you know, that is very mechanistic and disciplined. Get up, say your morning prayer, at night, say your prayer, say your act of contrition,
Before you eat.
So we have these memorized prayers in Catholicism. Other Catholic, Christian religions, it's more of like that personal connection with Jesus and talking to him. But here's where I'm at now. I used to think, oh, prayer, it's such a waste of time. Don't think that anymore. I do think probably too many people pray very selfishly for their God to grant them their desires and wishes rather than to allow them to follow his will. Probably be a better prayer.
I'll be a little cynical and break in here, right? Like, it's the sports player who hits the home run.
Yes.
He touches home plate and he points to the sky. God wanted me to hit that home run. God loves the Cardinals more than
God wanted
Cubs.
That pitcher to be a loser tonight.
Yes.
Is also what's going on there. 100%.
God chose me over them.
So outside of I would call that a almost more of a superstitious ritual for a baseball player to make them feel good psychologically to continue hitting home runs. For me, prayer now, it might be the one time of day or whenever people do it that they really are engaged in quiet reflection,
meditation,
analysis, thinking, just really diving in. And whether for them they're talking to God or getting direction from God, they're thinking through big problems in their lives and things going on. And I think that that's a great thing.
With a frame of faith and hope.
Yes. And a quiet mind, though. If they're truly in prayer, not out on their phone or watching TV, there's that quieting of the mind. And there's science has shown that that helps people physically. Not just physically, but emotionally and cognitively as well. So to me now, prayer, even though I'm not religious, if I have a big thing coming up, I reach out to everyone and I say, hey, you know, send me good vibes, good thoughts if I know they're agnostic or atheist. And I reach out to my religious people and say, hey, shoot me some prayers.
And I will absolutely say, you know, I'm praying for you to someone. It took me some time. I think we're dancing around the fact that language around religion is problematic. Yeah. You know, like when you say the word God, it means something different to the different people that you talk it to that you say it to. If you say it to anyone here in the U.S. who is, you know, U.S. is mainly Christian, right?
Right.
They mainly think about the Christian God and their framework for that. Versus Eastern religions, it could be totally different.
Oh, yeah.
Know? Or, I mean, if you're talking about Hinduism.
Yeah, they believe in thousands. Yeah.
I mean,
multiple gods.
So,
but people could also make the argument that Christian, and they do make that argument, is polytheistic because of the Holy Trinity.
Yeah, and I remember trying to learn about how that's they're one,
but they're three in one. Okay, anyway.
The thing is these terms like prayer, they invoke a certain response within you based on your understanding and your experiences with that structure. So as agnostics. Here's the interesting thing. If someone asks me, do I believe in God? My answer is typically yes. What is yours?
I'm sorry. I was totally zoning out, dude, thinking of my next thing to say. Terrible.
As an agnostic, if someone asks me, do I believe in God? I typically say yes.
I never answer direct questions like that because there's always an agenda behind the question. I always then frame it back to them and I say, well, define God to you.
Yeah. See, I just basically say, yes, I do, and then I give them the caveat.
Fair enough, but I like the power of the question.
I don't know if we have a shared meaning with what the word God means, right. But I do believe that there's some higher power or some greater purpose.
And it depends how well I know the person, because I'm not shy with my beliefs. So when I'm meeting a new, even business colleague, let's say we go have a dinner, we get in and we start talking about ideas outside of business. I'm pretty good at feeling people out, and I jump in right away and just say, you know, I can tell you've got some good faith and beliefs. Well, just so you know, I'm agnostic. But then I'm always tell them, but I'm a seeker. I love learning about what people believe. And that loosens people up. It discloses something about me. Then they always disclose about themselves. And every time I've done that, they've always been religious in some form or manner.
You know so that has happened to me before. The recurring experience that I seem to have with that is that the people who are most dead set in one of their single religions have done less exploring than I have done. Have you had?
Oh, yeah. Well, so you, here's another phrase, right? Oh, when the kids, you know, when they're older, you're going to come back to religion. Nope. Sorry. It's just not happening.
Right.
And we'll talk about what happens if our kids find religion and how we might each respond. And maybe we have different responses there. The other phrase that I often heard outside of the kid thing was that, well, you lost your faith. I don't like that phrase. That implies that I'm going through the world haphazardly and blindly.
Right.
And just, oops, where'd my faith go? No, whenever I hear that, I always say, well, I'm sorry to correct you, but I need you to understand the truth. I gave my faith back because I don't believe or agree with the answers to the questions that I ask.
I would even just say my faith evolved.
Yeah. That's a smarter way to say it.
I still have faith.
Absolutely.
I'm still a positive person. I still believe in a higher calling.
Oh, absolutely. Well, but
it's not
faith
like I've
isn't just
my faith.
In God.
It's just different than what your
faith is.
Faith is
what we have on this planet. We have faith that we're going to wake up tomorrow.
Well, and that, again, God, right, is different. You know, to me, God doesn't have to be personified. Anyway, we don't need to go down this road.
So do you want to talk about that real quick, this sort of progression?
I do.
Or you got something.
Before we jump into there, I want to say the last thing. I want to close the loop on the story about when oftentimes it'll be disappointing when I talk to somebody about this and say, you know, I'm an agnostic, I'm a seeker, I'm always trying to learn, is that the people who are most invested in a single religion oftentimes see that as their opportunity to recruit and assume that I am much less informed than they are then. And that's where that conversation goes. And I'd love to have a good strategy to, like, take it in another direction where we explore together. I just haven't found that yet.
Yeah. I mean, you got. I like. I'm not going to. I'm just going to talk about my strategy. I like to be upfront and use disclaimers, set the parameters for the discussion. So, hey, clearly we have some different belief systems. I'd love to just sit down and talk a little bit more with one understanding. You're not going to persuade me to join whatever it is you believe, and I'm probably not going to persuade you to become agnostic. But can we talk?
Right.
And then they're always like, well, yeah.
Yeah.
The best conversations I've ever had about religion and where I evolved was when I went to Texas A&M to get my PhD. I had an office mate named Josh, and very bright, very religious, and we got along fantastically. He was writing his entire dissertation on the rhetorical nuances on the problem of good versus evil. Yeah, and he was analyzing, obviously, the Bible, but a variety of other religious texts from a rhetorical, i.e. persuasive, lens. And Josh was, I believe, Baptist. If you ever listen to this, Josh, sorry if I got it wrong. I can't recall anymore. But we would have these intense, great conversations. And he finally said, you need to come meet my pastor. You guys will get along. So we did. And we started having these chats on a maybe every other week basis, and it was the best religious conversations I've ever had. They're the ones that labeled me, in a positive way, militant agnostic.
Right.
You know, I would bring my books. I'd bring my philosophy, my Nietzsche. I'd bring the science books, the epistemology, the ontology, all of that stuff, all the different world religious texts, and say, so these people are all wrong. Do they not believe in their beliefs as much as you do? What about the Muslims who kill themselves? Do they believe more than you? Right. And so it was very contentious, but playful.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it evolved. That's where I became kind of sharp and wanted to tear down. But now that I've gotten older, it's softened and it's all about, let me just learn what you believe. Great. That's why I love the good old U.S. of A.
Yeah.
We don't have to murder each other over it. We
it's
can
true.
Talk. We can disagree. We can even get heated. Yeah. We can call each other assholes and you're an idiot. You're going to burn in hell. But we don't have to kill each other over it.
No.
Whereas they do in a lot of other parts of the world. And that's not good.
It's not good. I mean,
so we're very lucky here to not have the prevention
the
of the establishment of religion.
To have the ability to record and release
to
this
record and release this
without fear.
Hey, amen.
Yeah.
Amen.
So I will say, there's something super fulfilling about those conversations you have, right? I remember one, I'll give credit to St. Louis University and the Jesuits there.
Oh, yeah.
They are the most informed Catholics that I have ever met. They're, a Jesuit priest, I think they call it like the doctor of Catholicism. It takes something like 13 years of study.
Well, they were the missionaries that went out and set up the schools. That was their mission.
And they know, you know what I mean? They know the Bible. They know the stories. They know the tradition. They know the things that are outside of the Bible. They will be able to tell you about the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Gospel of Thomas and the things that they contain and how the Bible was put together. They know it backwards and forwards, and they are rock solid in their faith. And I love that.
Me
I
too.
Love that.
I like anyone that is outside of somebody that might be trying to kill me
right.
over their faith. But even nowadays, in Texas, it was a bit more preachy, a bit more proselytizing, if you will, about trying to convert. Catholicism's really not that way, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a lot less so.
It's less in your face. It's more subtle,
ways. It is.
It's more join our club. Let's go out and have some beers. Let's do a little Bible study and cook together.
So we haven't talked about atheism.
No, we haven't.
So we've said agnosticism, and I think that most... Unfortunately, I think that a majority of religious people hear the word agnostic and think atheist.
Or they try to tear us down and it's like, well, you're just too scared to be an atheist. Okay, there you go.
Like you're straddling the fence, at least make a decision.
Yeah.
I would at least respect you if you made a decision. Right? So one of the things that I think about atheists is that in some regards, they have a leap of faith that is as strong as a religious person.
I would say in most regards.
They are confident there is no higher power and no God to the point where they believe on it with a lack. Like, I guess that's the thing about faith, right? And I would have to look up a definition of faith, but it's something like belief without evidence.
Yeah,
right?
That's what I use for years.
So they have belief without evidence that there is no higher power, and they are dead set in it. They are dead set in that, as any religious person is in belief of God.
But that's interesting, because both groups, atheists and organized religious people, will both point to the same set of evidence as support for their argument. Just look around you. Who created this from the religious person's standpoint, right?
Right.
Intelligent design. The atheist. Look around you. Look at the natural forces and laws that came into existence through the Big Bang.
We can explain this through science. Everything can be explained through science.
The God gene.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. It's like everything, for the atheist, everything can be explained through science.
Reason, rationality.
Therefore, there is no God. And on the flip side, everything can be explained through science. And look at how well it all works together. It just couldn't have been by coincidence. There's a God.
Right.
Right.
So for me, it's not even a progression, but the different sort of vehicles of belief are religion, spirituality, which we'll start talking about soon, philosophy, science, and technology.
I love it. And I love that you included science and technology in there. It seems a little bit...
No, dude, that is an absolute religion to people, man.
Oh,
and
is,
many of them are atheists, to be honest, but they worship science and technology as if it's going to save everyone. They treat it like a savior. They treat it like a prophet. Put your belief in it. And if you think that's odd, go watch YouTube videos. Go watch TED Talks of futurists and technologists.
Transhumanists, especially John, what's his name down in Texas?
John Arrow.
Yeah, who he believes he's going to live forever.
Right. Right. Yeah, he'll infuse his consciousness into a computer. Again, I don't want to pick any one person, but I'm saying that there are absolutely people that use science and technology or philosophy, a set of principles with which one should live their life. And let's go back to our factors and variables of an organized religion.
Yes.
So clearly the only one they wouldn't believe in for sure is the supernatural belief. But do they have dogma and doctrine? Absolutely. Are there rituals that evoke strong emotional responses? 100%. Is there faith? Yes. Belief in that science or tools. Hierarchy, obviously. Sacred and profane. You cannot put down technology. You cannot say that technology won't save us. Yeah. If you're against change or progress, you're backwards thinking. You were born in the wrong era.
Mm-hmm.
Stories as vehicles, except they're stories. I'd change that and say narrative is scientific and mathematical formulas, equations, and papers.
I'll even say, though, that they start to make religious figures. I mean,
gurus.
Think about, they take men and they elevate them, like Einstein, like Elon Musk.
Steve Jobs.
Like, Steve Jobs is a perfect example. Satoshi Nakamoto from the crypto
Bitcoin.
People.
And I respect and admire all those people, but the way in which other people worship. It's a sense of worship and obsession.
It is, yeah.
Anyway, I just put that up there, and I'm not saying that that's all bad. It just is.
Mm-hmm.
It's out there.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have anything else? Again, the philosophy one I think is interesting because I'm a big fan of it, and philosophers tend to live by their own principles, and they use logic, reason, and rationale, many, not all per se, to define their sense of purpose and meaning in this universe.
I just had a thought, right? Here's my thought. When you're talking about combat sports, like boxing or kickboxing or wrestling or whatever, those have evolved over time. Everyone has had these specialties. But when it comes down to the end of like who are the best at fighting, it's a blend of all of them.
Yep.
It's the people who can box and wrestle and know jiu-jitsu and whatever. They're the ones who are in the UFC. They're the ones who can beat any one specialty. And it's almost like in life, you need to be well-rounded in each of these areas. You need to know religion. You need to know spirituality. You need to know your philosophy. You need to have a good understanding of your science and technology. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And all the thinkers and doers that I respect all have a personal philosophy that they live by, a set of principles, a motto, a personal vision that they strived for and sought, just like organized religion.
Yeah, and I think it's not, it's like a Venn diagram, right?
Absolutely.
So right in the middle is where religion meets philosophy, meets your views on science and technology, and it's all part of your holistic view of life.
You mentioned John Arrow. When Noah Kagan, this podcaster and internet marketer we listen to, he was interviewing this John Arrow guy. If you haven't heard of him, you should go read about him because he's going to become a big figure, in my opinion, in the public moving forward. To totally lost my train of thought here.
About John Arrow?
John Arrow, yeah.
You know, he wants to live forever. He's a transhumanist.
He wants to live forever. Whatever. It'll come back to me. I want to pick, can we look at these?
Yeah. Let's talk about religions, specific religions.
All right. So we were raised Catholic. Really interesting. Down in Texas, a lot of people I ran into, my experience only, they didn't believe that, didn't know that Catholicism are Christians. They didn't realize that.
A lot of the newer Christianity religions look at the Catholic religion in a negative way.
Yeah, which was the first Christian religion.
It's very interesting. Yeah, the disciples?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the 12 disciples.
They founded Catholicism.
The church.
Yeah, and they founded Christianity.
So we have Catholic, we have Protestant, which is any type of Christian religion that is not Catholic, right? And Martin Luther broke off from the Catholic Church because he believed that Catholicism had lost its way and became too human, too profane, if you will, had gotten too far away from what the Bible was saying. And so he formed a new religion, the Reformation. Now, according to the World Church Encyclopedia, there's a couple stats out there I want to debunk. You'll often see this stat that there's 33,000 different Christian denominations, and I did a little research. That's just not true. But there are at least 9,000 different Christian denominations, meaning 9,000 different groups of people who have different interpretations of the doctrine and dogma included in the Bible, have different rituals, different hierarchies, different understandings of what sacred, profane, and moral should be, etc. What else do we got here, Dave?
The Jewish religion, I think, is a very important one. One of the things that you said was there was a misunderstanding among your experience with Christians in Texas or on the Catholic religion. Also, around the Jewish religion, has been my experience. Jesus was a Jew,
right?
There was no such thing as Christianity when Jesus was alive. Or Catholicism. Those religions were founded after his death, necessarily, because he is the center point of that. So Jesus practiced the Jewish religion.
Yes, and he was Jewish.
And everyone that he knew, yes, were Jewish.
That's clear.
I think that's interesting.
We got Muslim, right? So when you hear the term monotheistic, fancy word for belief in a single higher power, belief in a single God, typically that means Christianity, the Jewish faith, and Muslims, right?
Right, right. And their main figure, I don't know a whole lot about Islam.
Yeah, neither do I.
But I just know their main figure was Muhammad, and mm-hmm. he's their equivalent of Jesus.
Right. So Catholics, Jews, and Muslims all believe in one single higher power. And actually, all of their texts are quite similar in most areas.
And I think that you'll get into arguments, I've seen Christians and Muslims get into arguments about the fact that they believe in the same God, right?
Right.
So if there is one God and we believe in that one God, right, it doesn't matter who your prophet is or who his son was or whatever. You can disagree on those things. It's the same one God is one side of the argument.
Right.
Right. But I think a lot of Christians don't like that. They don't like to think of the fact that they would believe the same God as a Muslim.
So here's something that I started thinking about and struggling with even in high school. I'm born where? In Midwest America, in Illinois. Mm-hmm. So is it interesting that I grew up in a predominantly Catholic or Christian community, and that those beliefs and texts, that's it? That's the right one?
Yeah.
Whereas if I was born in Tehran, I would have most likely grown up Muslim,
yeah,
or in Israel, except to me, it's the environment is so important. It's just like, well, yeah, because that's where you were raised. That's what people believe.
Yeah, if you were born in India, you would be Hindu. If you were born in China, you would be Buddhist. And I bring that.
And actually, the Communist Party is worshipped as a religious institution there. That's a fact.
My God.
Yeah, and that's not me saying that. That's my Chinese counterparts. When I was going through my PhD, they said, oh, no, the only religion in China is the Communist Party.
Crazy. That's crazy. But your point is really good, and I don't think that people really think about that. And I think that ones who just have accepted the religion that the village that they were born into has, they when they're feeling uncomfortable about exploring, they never come to terms with that fact. Like, you were born into this.
Right.
When you were a child, this is what you were given.
This is the buildings and books that you were handed. This is it.
Yeah.
Your parents didn't take you to temple, to mosque, to all these different faiths.
Well, and we talk so much about our kids. Let's go down that road, right?
Well, real quick, let's hit a few of the others. We got Buddhism, Hindu, very polytheistic, belief in multiple gods, Scientology.
Oh, that's an interesting one.
Mormons.
Also another really interesting
Jesus
one.
Christ Church of Latter-day Saints, Mormons, and Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yes. So on those last three, I think, you know, just to remain in a spirit of positivism, and we're talking about Scientology, Mormons, and Jehovah's Witnesses, the recruiting is just like top.
And old school, man. They're going door knocking. I don't know about Scientology. The Mormons, they come through Webster Groves all the time.
They are the ones who have the greatest record of genealogy and family history.
Right.
And because there's something about the Mormon belief where even if you didn't accept it when you were alive, if you didn't claim something, I think, at your death, or at least if it's not recorded, you can still be baptized into the Mormon faith after death.
Posthumously.
Posthumously. And so they do that.
Really interesting religions. My view is that the way that, again, many Christian religions, Protestants of different faiths, and Catholics, they like those religions, Jehovah's Witness, Mormon, and Scientology, because they're so non-mainstream, odd, and weird. They're fringe religions to the mainstream Christians, and it makes them feel like, well, yes, I am religious, but I'm not like them. Mm. I don't believe in Thetans. I don't have to the aliens living within me, and I have to be audited. Right. So they always make fun of these rituals that come out of Scientology. They make fun of the fact that Jehovah's Witnesses don't believe in modern medicine, won't do blood transfusions, won't celebrate most federal holidays. They make fun of the fact that Mormons used to be polygamous. Mm-hmm. They have some interesting requirements with their undergarments that they have to wear.
I believe it's celestial, you know.
But when you talk about some of the beliefs of mainstream Christianity and Catholicism in more plain-spoken ways, you know, so you believe a woman that never had sex was impregnated by a spirit that lives in the sky who knows everything before it happens because he created it all. And yet there's an evil power called the devil who that bigger spirit also created because God created everything, who's trying to persuade you to do bad things. But God already knows what you're going to do because he created you.
And his son, you know, was dead and is back from the dead, you know, technically a zombie. Right, and for your ritual, you eat his body.
You eat his blood.
You drink his blood.
And you eat his body.
Yeah, and that's
transubstantiation. I believe is what they call that.
Yeah, it's not bread. It is actually the flesh.
Yes,
of
and
Jesus
but again,
Christ.
That's interesting. I wish if we put that to the friends that eat, that take the host, you know what they think, because according to the dogma, it is you are eating.
So that's what transubstantiation is. It's once the priest blesses the host and the wine, they are no longer bread and wine. They are transformed into the body and the blood of Jesus Christ. And when you go up to receive your communion, they say the body of Christ, and as they put it in your hand, the blood of Christ as you drink it. Yeah.
Anyway, so it's just interesting. I think that those what they would call fringe religions serve a purpose, just like fringe political commentators, people on the far right and left. They're really important to the mainstream people because then everybody can point to them and be like, well, I'm not like them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really easy. You know, it's us versus them.
What's the most important thing to have if you need to create cohesion and symbolic unity?
A common enemy. Yeah, I like that. That's good. Okay, so we've done a good job of attacking every single religion on the planet.
I wouldn't say that we attacked it.
Well,
we're
just pointing out their idiosyncrasies. How's that? And I would also go so far as to say, you know, the grouping we did was probably not comprehensive. It wasn't comprehensive, and I would say some people in some of those religions would definitely not want to be grouped with the other ones that we said that they were in the same groups as.
So, absolutely.
So apologies to anyone that we offended that way. Definitely didn't intend that. That said, let's talk about our kids. So what do we do with our kids? Everyone who – and there's this need for parents, right, to say, this is my faith, this is my belief. I'm going to go to the good place after death. We haven't even talked about death, which we need to talk about.
We might have to divide this bad boy up because we're at 48.
We certainly should. We should. What do you want to end it at, an hour? Anyway.
Well, how about we do this? Let's just spitball with our crowd. What do you think? We haven't talked at all about spirituality, and this was supposed to be religion and spirituality.
Yeah, we haven't. We haven't talked about death. We're just now getting into the kids and passing on of your beliefs.
Do you want to just make this one a longer one?
I would be down for that.
Okay.
I would say let's
because if not, that also messes up our cover art progression that's already been created.
Good point. So when it comes to our kids, one of the things that Zach pointed out was the pressure of family and friends to say, once you have kids, you'll change. You will want to bring up your kids in this in this framework, in this community, in this village that you were born into. And there is something very enticing about that. I have no denial of that whatsoever.
Absolutely.
And there's also a belief that to teach your kids the difference from right and wrong, they have to have religion.
Morals only come from religion.
That's the only way that you can learn.
Yes.
So
what people believe, but Dave and I do not believe that.
Exactly. So that being said, I'll just give a brief synopsis of what I think my strategy will be with my kids. My kids are 3.5 and 1, so this is evolving through time, you know. But I think what I want for my kids to do is I think I want to encourage my children to explore religion in the same way that I am trying to explore religion myself. And so to give a little bit of an explanation of how I am trying to explore religion myself is I'm trying to learn at least the basic tenets, a little bit about the religion, the rituals, the hierarchy, all of the things, all of the components of major religions to see which ones that I can identify with and take positive, useful tools out of. What can I incorporate into my, you know, my life skill set? I said earlier, I think that religion and philosophy and your views on science and technology all kind of build this, your life skill set, tool set, belief set. And so I'm trying to explore religions and identify the useful pieces of each just from a positive standpoint and try to incorporate each of those into my life belief set, skill set, whatever you want to call it. And so I want to encourage my children to do the same. I think when our family and our friends said, well, you're going to want to raise them in the Catholic Church or in a Christian faith of some kind. And I think when we were like, well, you know, I don't think we're going to go down that road, they instantly thought, or their first thought was, well, then you're going to either A, not expose them to religion at all, or you're going to B, try to make them atheist or something. Because that's just the way that their minds go.
No, instantly. But that's human minds. We fill assumptions with negative information.
Right. Well, if it's not going to be my thing, then it's going to be most likely nothing, right?
Or a bad thing.
So my strategy, and I would love to hear, A, from you, Zach, and I want to hear, this is something that I would love to get feedback from the crowd on, if that is my strategy, to expose kids to multiple religions and to be able to explore the tenets of a bunch of different religions and try to take the positive points out of each and incorporate it into their own life skill set. What is a good strategy for that? I've heard people say the Universalist Unitarian Church is a good way to go there.
That would be it. That's it. Because think about it. You have this great idea and vision for how to do it. But now think about it from the religious person and organization that you approach in a church, mosque, or synagogue who believe in their own dogmas, doctrines, rituals, faith, hierarchy, sacred, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
You give your explanation. You're saying, I'm never going to believe in this. I just want to take your best practices and expose my kid.
Yeah.
I don't see how they're not going to.
They're not going to be receptive.
Yeah, because it's just like, well, buddy, what are you talking about here? You want to play for my baseball team only when we play in the home stadium?
And I feel like you and I have had this experience.
We have, but were we really welcomed?
That's what I'm saying. We've had this experience.
Oh, I see what you're saying. What I'm saying is that
we explored.
Well, real quick, let's say that story, but go back. The Universal Unitarian Church is, in my opinion, where you can get that. They sample from all faiths, all world religions, and not just world religions. They bring in readings and writings, pop culture about technology, arts, entertainment, dance, something that people in the audience write, a song, poetry, and they get up and they read that. And then they talk through it and have discussion. That's where you'll find that. There are also these sectarian, for lack of a better term, churches popping up. And I got to meet the one guy in London that had created that. So it's kind of like you use, where it's open, except they don't bring in religion at all, really. It's just whatever you want to talk about, your own belief systems. It's kind of similar to group therapy, if you will.
Okay.
But talk about our experience of seeking and trying to go understand. And I think that that's why your plan for your kids, it's not going to be as easy as you think.
I would agree 100%. And let me say, the reason why I have this plan for my kids is because I think if I give them nothing, then that hole, that discomfort, that yearning for our place in the universe is just going to be, it's not going, they can fill it with bad things that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it,
or that it, vacuum can,
it will get filled, because you're acting like they're just with you.
Right.
What did I write here? Setting. Claudia's classmates are already talking about God. She's almost five. You know, she's already told us, I believe in Jeebus.
Mm-hmm.
That's what she calls him. Because my mom had talked. And our parents know our faith, and we've gone through sort of our beliefs versus theirs and what we want them to talk about with the kids at different parts. But at the end of the day, you cannot control what they're going to be exposed to at school.
You can't. Or in life.
Right.
And so I would just rather have her have a really wide exposure to many different things so that she can choose the path that she wants on her own, because I feel like an educated choice is a better choice. So I like the idea of going to Universalist Unitarian. Zach and I have tried to explore faith on our own in different ways. When we were in high school, we had a shared experience with a non-denominational church.
Yes, summer. My ex-girlfriend. We went. That was when you were recovering after the first bout with cancer.
Yes, I still didn't have my hair back.
No hair, but you were well at that point physically.
I was on the way back.
And Sarah, my girlfriend at the time, was non-denominational. Assemblies of God, I believe, was what she was in. Anyway, and her family had a strong faith, a very good faith, a faith that I admired big time. Her parents were involved. Her sister played guitar. You know, I'd go all the time to their Wednesday night sort of youth, what would it call it? Like, not mass, youth ceremony.
Ritual.
Youth event. It was cool, man. It was upbeat. I got into it. And so there was a church camp in the summer, and her parents were like, you guys could go to it. It'd be good because a lot of people praying for Dave. So we did.
And we had prior experience with religious summer camps. We had gone to Camp Ondesank, which is a Catholic camp that is in the middle of southern Illinois, very southern Illinois, in the Shawnee National Forest. And it is true to the Catholic religion in that you went to church one time of the week.
I was going to say, I don't remember that being religious at all. But there you go, Catholic faith.
I mean, there's a cross right on the shirt. And,
yeah.
But you pray before meals, right? But also sing songs and things like that. But it was more about summer camp. It was more about, swimming in lakes and rowing.
Summer camp foreground, Catholic religious stuff background.
Yeah. And then, by the way, there's church. You go to church, too, one time that week. And then you say prayers before meals and stuff like that. But it's about summer camp. And so that was our experience. And we're like, and, of course, there was a brochure that showed like a lake and a big bouncy thing on the lake. I don't know if you remember all this, but it was like, it was really enticing. And so Zach,
you mean for the second one that we went to in high school?
Yeah, the second one, the high school one. Because I was I don't know. Why would I go to this other religion that I'm not a part of?
And I know why, because I'm persuasive. Yeah, and Zach I wanted to go hang out with my girlfriend for a week with no supervision. I'm like, let's go, dude.
And Zach's like, I want my best friend to go with me. So I went. And
I remember that conversation. You're like, why would I go to this?
It was an experience. I will say it was an experience.
It was. Very different for us.
It was. So it was multiple hours of church every day. Or multiple hours of ritual.
Many. Yes.
And heavy, heavy on the recruitment persuasive portion.
And heavy on the you need a personal relationship with Jesus portion.
And that you are you are Catholic, and that is not they did not see that as
Catholic
okay.
Ain't cool. Catholic ain't cool with
that.
Them.
Was not an okay thing to remain Catholic.
I think they had a goal, an organizational goal, looking back, thinking about the human side of their purpose there, to try to convert. I bet they had conversion quotas.
I guarantee it. It was not okay for Zach and I to remain Catholic.
It wasn't.
By the end of that week, they did not want that. So they did things. They took Zach and I, they basically broke us apart so that they could work on us individually. And they surrounded us with 10, 12 people laying hands on us, praying for us.
We're right in the middle of this, and all these 25 to probably 30-year-olds, not older people, but older at the time, laying their hands on us, praying.
Praying for us. And imagine, at the time, we believed in Jesus. We believed Jesus was the Son of God. We were Catholic, and we told them that. It wasn't good enough for them.
No.
Like, we didn't believe in their...
Man, I forgot about that part and the breaking us apart. Like,
they broke us apart, and then they started the talking in tongues.
Oh, that's... See, I remember the when we all got in a line, and then they came around. That was my vivid memory. And the leaders, they'd lay your hands, and then you'd fall back into the hands. And I remember whispering in Dave's ear, who was in front of me, I'm like, dude, if I don't get hit by, like, the Holy Spirit, I'm just fucking falling.
Yeah.
And when they did that to me, I was, you know, I was that Daniel Day-Lewis, man. Fell back, and they're speaking in tongues, the tongue
to get
speaking.
Me to speak in tongues.
Yes, trying to get both of us to.
I wouldn't do it. I remember very vividly, I just wouldn't do it.
Oh, gosh, that was so...
And I don't know if anyone has never heard someone speak in tongues before, but it sounds like a lot of K's and R's and S's.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like that. Like exactly that.
Did you remember? Did I do it? I don't have a recall of if
I
did or
didn't.
I don't
know. I remember you told me you were going to fall if they hit you. And I remember being like, I guess I have to fall.
Yeah, because you don't want to be the only guy standing.
Uh-huh. And I was like, but my God, I am not fake talking. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
I don't remember about that.
Because I was just like, I don't. Anyway. So that was our first, and that was a kind of a traumatic experience.
It was intense.
A week of that, right? So coming out of that was really, really turned me off of whatever it was they were trying to sell.
Whatever it was.
And then, you know, as adults, Zach and I, we've shared this life journey so much together and been in lockstep on so many things.
Yeah,
I think
we
realized that there's still something that we need.
Right.
We still want to be spiritual people. We still want to be positive and have faith and some answers to what this crazy thing is that's called life. Hence our desire to have this podcast. But we said, let's explore some new religions. Let's talk about which ones we want. And Zach's like, I'm pretty high on Buddhism right now. I've heard some really good things. I like the stuff I've learned about it. Let's try and find a Buddhist temple. And there was one right here in town.
Yeah, in Webster Groves, Missouri.
Yeah.
The Blue Dharma Temple. And so we went to a couple Buddhist ceremonies, and I really enjoyed it. But unfortunately, the business side of their religion, which they wouldn't even call it religion, they'd call it an enlightened path, a set of principles to live a good, fulfilled life, and the life that you were always meant to live. But they didn't have capital, so they lost their space, and they were in a small room in a basement anyway. But I do believe they've reopened in a new neighborhood.
They have.
So maybe we should look that up. But I enjoyed it because, of course, there's a ceremony, there's ritual. They read from some different texts and have some sensory parts that are supposed to evoke emotions from your senses. But then after that, it's open discussion on what was said. And that is what I really liked. What about you?
I loved it in the fact that, you know, in the Catholic religion, you grow up, and in Christian, you grow up with sermons. So the priest decides what they're going to talk about today. And my experience with the Catholic religion was they would read, you know, you have your first reading,
second reading,
and
the
then
gospel.
And then the priest talks about that, and he tries to relate it to life. And in the Catholic religion, they really stay close to the text, and it's repetitive. You know, in my years and years of going to Catholic church, in 1 year.
I think that's evolved, though, Dave, to be honest, nowadays.
And I think that they're evolving it to try to be more palatable, to try to compete with these newer Christian faiths. One of the things Zach said about the non-denominational one and how he used to go to their youth rituals on weeknights, see, they're trying, the newest ones are trying to make this palatable. They have, like,
It's an experience. Oh, it's a rock and roll. It's not guitar.
Roll,
it's a rock and roll
it's
band.
Like a,
they have
a concert
now. These churches, like I went to Ryan Sparks. He got baptized recently, and he didn't you know, he was talking about, oh, my mom's not going to be able to make it. So I offered to go and support him. And, you know, so I did. And it was obviously uncomfortable for me to a degree. But his people were, you know, they thanked me for coming. They didn't try to do any persuasion because I said, hey, as long as I'm not getting up and having to admit my sins kind of thing. So it was really neat. But I walk in. They probably have literally $1 million to $2 million AV system. Just fantastic at this church. Like a concert. They have a coffee bar. You know, so it's, to me, again, it's that human element, and I like that.
Yeah.
And so the Catholic religion, as Dave is saying, is, I think, starting to adopt some of that, but the Catholic religion is also forking. They're going, getting away from that, some churches, and becoming more orthodox and conservative and traditional. Others are embracing that.
I mean, and this is how you end up with 9,000 different tenets of Christianity, but basically what I was going down the road of is... The Catholic Church now is trying to be a little bit more palatable to compete with the recruiting styles of these newer Christian things.
The Pope tweets.
Yeah. The thing that I liked about the Buddhist religion, the rituals that we went to, is instead of a ceremony where you're being talked at and taught to, it was a community discussion with a leader who helps answer questions based on their religious text and uses their story as vehicle portion to convey wisdom.
I liked that it was very Socratic. So I don't remember them giving any answers. This is the way. Socratic, which a lot of people don't want. They want answers from a religion, and that's not necessarily what Buddhism is about.
Yeah, I remember that they would tie things back, when I said story as vehicle, they would tie things back to stories about the Buddha and experiences that the Buddha had or whatever. But they were all open-ended, you know, and I enjoyed that. It was like something that it was a religion that encouraged exploring. It encouraged meditation. You know, when we talk about prayer and things that we do,
right?
Like, and so and those were all the positive things. When I said I'm trying to explore stuff and take positive things out, I was trying to take all those positive things out. There were some things that it's like, well, it would be a leap for me to accept this, like reincarnation.
Right.
They believe in reincarnation, and it was like, you know, okay. Again, that would be a leap for me to. So when I say I'm on this exploratory journey, I'm trying to take the things that the best of each thing. It's like, it's crazy how you go into a religion, they don't want to admit that. It's almost like they have a menu, right? And like everything on their menu isn't great. You know, they've got some good stuff, you know, and you go to a restaurant,
but
you don't have to like
everything.
But
that's also a metaphor that most, at least, Christian religions use. To put people down like us. Well, you're just shopping around. You're just trying to take the best things from each religion. And I just say, yeah.
Yeah,
of course.
What's wrong with that?
Because at the core, what are we all trying to do as humans? Maximize our positive emotions and feelings and minimize our negative ones.
Yes. Yeah. And to me, just tying it back to my experience from the story at the beginning of this, I'm trying not to lie to myself, right? Mm-hmm. Because I can lie to myself for years or even decades. I've learned that I can do that. But there's going to be a day of reckoning where you have to be honest with yourself at the end of the day. And on that time, how comfortable are you going to be with the things you've explored, the lessons that you've taken, and the life that you've lived, your belief structure?
And on the flip side of that is you had that epiphany, if you will, that spiritual experience that organized religion isn't for you. I could label that a spiritual experience, a spiritual decision. On the flip side, though, religious people, you have to respect that they have the same one, but within their system.
Yes.
And that you have to, if you're a true agnostic, accept that, except if they're trying to ram it down your throat. That's different.
Right.
So for anyone that is agnostic, atheist, undecided, a deist, just unsure, really great new book by Wendy Thomas Russell called Relax, It's Just God, How and Why to Talk to Your Kids About Religion When You're Not Religious. Man, I've read this thing cover to cover a couple times. It's already served me well. She goes through some sort of the historical revolution of religion very briefly, and then talks about the rise of the nuns, people that self-identify as having no religion, and they outnumber lots of other groups in the United States. But it's all about your kids, and I know I've recommended Dave to read this, but I'm going to double recommend it to you again, especially with your strategy of what you want to do. It's full of how to do this. So her kids are like probably 10 and 8 and 10 or 12 or, you know, so they go to these different religions as a family. If, oh, Millie wants to do this. Okay. Can I go to her church? Okay. So they'll go. And they talk to, and she talks through the strategies of how do you have, manage and navigate these conversations when you're there without offending them, but saying, hey, we're trying to give our daughter different experiences, et cetera, et cetera. Very, very useful. I've used it a ton. Another great book, The Jefferson Bible, The Life and Morals of Jesus of Nazareth, written by Thomas Jefferson, my favorite president, our third president. He took the Bible, I believe just the New Gospel, and only removed the supernatural phrases about when Jesus is referred to as the Son of God and left in everything else about how he lived his life. And most people that consider themselves universal Unitarian, you know, the Jefferson Bible is one of their main texts. And it is a book on how to live a good and moral life. It's a playbook on how to be moral without referencing what we can never truly know, but we can feel and believe is beyond death.
So why don't we make that a change challenge? The change challenge that is going to be a part of this religion and spirituality episode is going to be very uncomfortable for anyone who considers themselves hard set in a religion. But that is the nature of exploring life. And if you're going to live a naturally curious life, then you must explore outside of your current zone. Read, relax, it's just God. Read the Jeffersonian Bible.
Or let's start, make it easier.
Okay.
Pick them up and read a chapter.
Read a chapter.
In each book.
Read the jacket cover.
So your chapter I'd recommend for you, Dave, is Giving Kids a Choice and Meaning It.
Okay. I absolutely will read that. And I would say that that would be a good first step of a change challenge. If you want to take the change challenge to its natural, step two, it would be to try to find something, and this is going to be so hard, try to find something that is directly contradictory to the belief structure you currently hold and try to consume it and give it credence at least for the time that you read it and try to digest it. Because if you are, it is my opinion that, and I think that we've talked about this for an hour now, at least.
Hour 10.
And I've come down to how I can boil this down for myself and explain it for myself and how I want my kids to look at religion and spirituality. And for me, life is a journey. It is not a destination. And to me, it seems that a lot of the large religious organizations, a lot of the large religions are treating their brand as a destination. And you have to choose their destination. And I don't believe that that's what life is about. I believe life is a journey. And so I will travel through destinations and I will experience them and I'll try to take as much as I can out of them. But I don't ultimately think that I have to settle at any one destination. Or, you know, my destination can just be a collection of the experiences I've had in all of those along my journey. And so I want to live my life that way, and I want to pass that along to my kids as well. I would say that that's as succinct as I can put it.
Nice. Where does a soul fit in for you?
Wow.
Right.
We're agnostic, Zach. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, a soul and a consciousness, too, right?
Yeah, so we didn't talk about what consciousness is. Hard to define.
So what happens after we die? We didn't talk about death. You know, these are all things.
It's simple for me. I don't know, period.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it. That's my answer.
I mean, nobody really knows. And I love how people try to bring as
I was
many
dead things. And came back.
Yes,
and,
yes. Oh,
and that's fine. Well, then maybe you know, but I don't know.
Right.
My experience, I don't know.
Right. And not only that, but is my, you get into philosophy here.
Is my
experience of life the same as yours? If I see the color red, is it the same color red that you see? And so on and so forth.
It's really interesting that all major religions have to have a dogma and doctrine. And what form are they in? Textual. The written word. One of the most misunderstood, misinterpreted forms of communication we have, oftentimes completely subjective, tied to people's personal biases and socialization experiences. It is just ripe for the opposite of disagreement, for conflict.
Because of interpretation, just like you said. The one thing I'll say on this is I really like what Jordan Peterson has to say about religion, story, text, and interpretation. So if anyone wants to, please go out and Google. He's got plenty of YouTube videos. He's been interviewed on Joe Rogan Experience, and he does a very good job of explaining. He's actually a Christian, and I think he's Catholic, but his explanation of religious texts, stories, and truth, trying to tie them to truth, and obviously truth is a loaded word, but he does a really good job of explaining it, and I buy into his explanations. So there's no way we can get into it in this hour. I just really recommend listeners of this podcast, if you're interested, go check out Jordan Peterson and what he has to say about religion.
There's something else that we failed to mention. If you are a fundamentalist, meaning you fundamentally believe your core doctrines and beliefs, don't go have conversations with people because you're just going to waste your time and make yourself angry. If you know that you're never going to be open to exploring, that's a fact. You're just not. Why waste your time? Go find the positive emotions and energies. Go be part of whatever group you're a part of that share those other fundamental beliefs. Because if you're not willing to even engage in open dialogue and debate and do thought experiments and put a veil of ignorance over your head where, okay, I'm going to act like I don't know. Just try to convince me. It's pointless.
Well, you're not our target audience either.
Right. But at the end of the day, if somehow some fundamentalists are listening, don't go do some of this stuff, man. Go strengthen your fundamentalist beliefs with your fundamental buddies.
I suppose. I mean, that's being like our Life Lab podcast is about exploring and questioning. And we're like, don't explore.
I'm about using my time on this earth. So if I'm someone who's never going to do any of this, well, yes, why are you even listening to our...
You should have stopped listening.
Stop listening.
Yeah. So anyway.
Soul, yes. I don't know. To me, though... Is there something beyond our rationality, logic, senses, and reason? Yeah. Feelings. We get them. And you can call them spiritual experiences. You can call them...
Mystical experiences.
Something different and unique. And I don't want to explain some things. That's, for me, the problem with science, the narrative of science. Everything needs to be explained and measured, controlled and predicted. And it's like, no, I don't. I like having a bit of mystery. That sense of awe and wonderment and not knowing is exciting. It's curiosity. It's about exploring. And so if the narrative of science guides everything in your life, man, that is a very metered way of living.
It's
dry. Very dry. Well, it's a lab.
It's one skill. It's one, you know, in that tool set of skills that we talked about, science and technology, philosophy, religion, spirituality, you're only focusing on one. You're missing out on a lot.
You're missing out on the art, the play, the messiness, combining, mixing.
You have an incomplete belief set, an incomplete skill set, in my opinion.
We didn't really do spirituality. It's due, but... Maybe we can try to weave that in some other time.
Yeah, this one's just too long, unfortunately. And I, of course, this is something I could talk several more hours on. But we got to.
So
wrap
here's
up.
My change challenge: just go have a conversation with somebody you love about either religion or spirituality. And if that's tough, set a couple parameters for that conversation up front of why you're doing it, and be clear on what your goal is in the conversation. And I would encourage you to not be trying to convert or persuade, but just have an interesting conversation about something.
Yeah, and I would say if you consider yourself an open person everywhere in life except for your religious beliefs, and you start to have these conversations, and you notice discomfort when certain things are breached, you know, stick a pin in that. Revisit it yourself.
Repressing it.
Yeah, instead of like repressing it, ignoring it, you know, it's going to come up at some point in time. That discomfort is a sign that you haven't settled this with yourself. You haven't come to terms with what you believe or what you don't believe. It's a sign that you may be lying to yourself, for lack of a better way of saying it.
Yeah. Last but not least, again, Relax, It's Just God by Wendy Thomas Russell. Good stuff. Good book.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you for listening through this episode. This one was different than most of our episodes because, it's such a sensitive topic, and because of our backgrounds and our experience with it. I hope you have enjoyed it, and I hope you have taken something out of it. If anything, I hope that this is either the start of your journey, because like I said, I believe life is a journey and not a destination, or I believe it has renewed your desire to explore, renewed your curiosity, because... Man, that's the fire that burns the passion in life.
Absolutely. One last shout out to Harry and Gilbert from Arch Audio and Baking Engineers. We love our intro and outro.
Go get a Goliath.
Get the Goliath. And as we always say here, experiment with religion and
experiment with life.